Welcome to Faith and Family, a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. And now from Greenville, South Carolina, here's your host, Steve Wood.
Hello, this is Steve Wood, and welcome today to Faith and Family. I'd like to thank you again for joining us for the teaching series, How to Prepare Catholic Youth for Life in a Homosexual Culture. I want to emphasize the title of this series. We're premising it that our beloved United States is heading towards not just homosexual acceptance, so to speak, but really it's going to be a pervasive cultural transformation that will happen to the morality of this country as same-sex marriage is progressively legalized, and then the homosexual agenda is pervasive within our educational institutions and our media, and it's especially going to affect our youth. And that's what these broadcasts are all about, is how to prepare Catholic youth. Now, many of the broadcasts that you're hearing over Catholic radio and in the media and even the books you read are often targeted at, say, 50-year-old faithful Catholics. And the books and the broadcasts are generally using only natural law arguments that seem to make all the sense in the world to the listeners. They make sense to me. But I'm not talking about trying to prepare middle-aged faithful Catholics for life in a homosexual culture. I'm talking about preparing teens, 20-year-olds, and even trying to reach our secular society. What approach do we take with them? I'm sure you know that our current strategy for defending the sanctity of marriage and opposing same-sex marriage and homosexual activism isn't working very well. It isn't working even amongst Catholics. Even those Catholics who are attending Mass regularly are being pushed over into the acceptance crowd of same-sex marriage. It's not really working with the general public. It's obviously the public voter sentiment, and the research polls show this isn't going in the right direction. And our current strategy particularly isn't working with youth and young adults. And that's where we want to focus today. Now, if you were going to open the Bible to try to get some guidance on this, probably the prime chapter of the Bible that would address homosexuality, a culture that is seeped in it, and what to do about it, it would be St. Paul's Epistle to the Romans, Chapter 1. And before you just kind of half check out today, like, yeah, I've heard people on the Catholic radio talk about Romans chapter 1. But I want to emphasize that a little later in this broadcast, I'm going to mention the two most important verses in Romans chapter 1 that deal with a homosexual culture and how to get people out of it. And 99% of the time that I have heard Romans chapter 1 mentioned, these two verses are ignored completely. And they're the key for everything that Paul mentions in the entire epistle, and they're key to what Paul describes in chapter 1. So let's dig into the passage. Now, what you've heard before, and I'm going to repeat again, is Paul's description starting in verse 18 of the first chapter in Romans about the situation of depravity in the Gentile world. And basically, you might say, they had all the evidence in the world of God's existence, but they didn't pay any attention to it because they willfully ignored and suppressed that evidence. This is what St. Paul says. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and wickedness of men who by their wickedness suppress the truth. In other words, this was a willful act. For what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. Ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature, namely his eternal power and deity, have been clearly perceived in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. I mean, I basically say, how can you be an atheist and see a beautiful sunset or sunrise? But what Paul is saying is that even though the existence of God was as evident as could be, and basically the whole problem started with theology. The whole problem started with their acknowledgement of who God was. They ignored that and fell into idolatry. But even though they were without excuse, we need to recognize that God's existence, clear as day, literally and figuratively and spiritually, to these pagans, they didn't heed it, and they fell into darkness, and their minds were darkened. And natural law today, by itself, even though it may prove effective for, say, a faithful Catholic listener in his or her 50s, make all the sense in the world, we're talking about reaching Catholic youth where the natural law arguments are rolling just off their backs and not really sticking. It's the same thing that was happening in pagan Rome is happening in our beloved country today, particularly with our youth. Paul's going to have a solution for this. So again, stay with me, but I want to unpack the problem first. And the problem has been very frequently referred to in the first chapter of Romans, starting with verse 18 all the way to the end of the chapter. And basically, the progression goes from turning from the Creator, falling into idolatry, sexual licentiousness, homosexuality and lesbianism, and then finally open approval of homosexual lifestyles. Now, I've already told you about the denial of the Creator, the first few verses there, starting with verse 18. And then you get to verse 24, God's reaction to their basically suppressing and acknowledging and thanking their Creator and turning into idolatry. This is what God's response is, and it's terrifying. It's Romans chapter 1 and verse 24. It says, "Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies amongst themselves." Why? Because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator. You know why I said that's a terrifying verse? Because one of the most terrifying things in the world is where an individual pushes so hard against God, pushes so hard against the clear evidence of God, pushes so hard against the conscience and everything else, and the same thing happens for cultures and countries, that it reaches a point where God says, "Okay, I'm going to let you have your way." And that's a frightening thing when you're heading in the wrong direction. And I just point out here that there is a confusion as tall as the Empire State Building within Christian circles, both Protestant and Catholic. I've been, many ages ago, full-time youth minister, but if you say, what's the problem of youth today? Catholic youth, the sexual revolution, shacking up together before marriage, homosexual experimentation and everything else. So what we need, just massive doses of chastity speakers and sex education and theology of the body with trying to correct this. Now, don't get me wrong. You do need proper sex education, particularly in the home. You do need chastity speakers. But I dare say what is going on within the church today is confusing symptoms with causes. The reason the pagan world fell into immorality was because they had lost sight of God. Their problem, the cause of their immorality, was a lack of belief and acknowledgement and thanksgiving to their Creator. And so rather than simply focusing on the symptoms, which so often is the direction of youth ministry today, the real direction should be bolstering the faith so it's a real, genuinely, personally received faith deep within the person's being. That's what keeps young people from the symptoms of sexual immorality. And I invite you to look carefully simply at Romans chapter 1 and verse 24 and make sure you don't fall into the trap as a parent of confusing symptoms with causes. Okay, you go a little bit further, and Bible commentators are a little divided whether or not this is kind of like a 3D view. In other words, these things all happen simultaneously, or this is kind of a descent into further and further levels of depravity. I'm kind of falling into myself that second school, which sees this is kind of a descent, and I must admit part of it has to do with what I've seen in my own lifetime, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the next terrifying verse is verse 26. After it speaks about God giving them up and basically falling into sexual license and fornication and such, in verse 46, it says again, "For this reason, God gave them up, but this time to dishonorable passions where women exchanged natural relations for unnatural, and men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing acts with men and receiving in their own persons the due penalty for their error." And again, what we have in these acts of lesbianism and homosexuality and not just orientations, you're talking about lust, passions, and acts, those were fundamentally symptoms of a problem that's theological, namely a proper orientation of the person with God, and you lose sight of that, not just individuals, but cultures. God gives them up, and that's a terrifying thing. And then in verse 28, it says, "And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up," now a third time, "to a base mind and improper conduct, and now everything breaks loose. People filled with all manner of wickedness, evil, malice, envy, murder, strife, deceit, gossip, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, heartless, ruthless." This is what happens when a society turns from God. And the answer is turning to God, because that's the fundamental cause of these symptoms exploding. Now, I mentioned that I fall into the school which sees this as kind of a descent of the pagan world in stages. It could be a 3D picture of everything happening at once. But the reason, and it's very much autobiographical, I'll admit, why I chose the second school, it's this. Growing up in the 50s and the 60s, we were given very large super gulp cups of Brother Darwin to drink in school. And we were told that, you know, we came here by evolution and random chance, and it wasn't a creator, was the very easy deduction to make. And that was the 50s and early 60s. And then the first God gave them up, I mean, just to put a name on this, Woodstock. It was when basically the rock and roll and sex and anything goes cultures exploded on the American scene. Obviously, the volcano was spilling lava before that, but Woodstock, Romans 1:24. And then you get, after the sexual liberation, sexual revolution gets rolling, then you have the second God gave them up. And to me, it's San Francisco, where the homosexual movement just basically exploded on the culture. And then finally, when you find society falling apart as it seems, when you have all these things going on like envy, murder, strife, deceit, heartless, ruthlessness, disobedience to parents, wickedness, evil, covetous everywhere. That's today. Read the paper. And then verse 32, it says, though they knew God's decree that those who do such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but approve of those who practice them. And that's really what's kind of going on now. We're in a transition phase to tomorrow, when we'll find, maybe even as early as this June, the United States Supreme Court saying something as bizarre as two men marrying each other should have legal sanction in the United States, and even to the degree it would override the laws of the individual states. Society approval for morality turned upside down. Now, that's the problem. And for the problem, I'm in 100% harmony with probably everybody you've heard on Catholic media before, but now we're going to take a different turn. And just so you know, I can remain friends and friendly with those who radically disagree with me, but this is going to look like a different turn. And I'm very concerned that for you as a parent, you're hearing talks that might make all the sense in the world to a middle-aged adult. They are not going to keep young people from falling to the clutches of a homosexual culture. And hence, I'm going to give a different emphasis on Romans chapter 1. The key to the passage we just read, starting in Romans 1, verse 18 and following, that God gave them up, God gave them up, and God gave them up. That's the problem. But what in the world is the solution? And the solution being presented is natural law arguments alone. I have no problem with natural law arguments, and they make a lot of sense, particularly the older you are. But I do have a problem with natural law arguments alone when they're not working with young people and a wider secular culture. And they didn't work in the first century because the evidence of order and design and creation was there, that there was even a creator. It was there, St. Paul says, but they willfully suppressed it. So what do you do for these people? Just tell them you should believe what we believe, but they don't believe it and leave them alone? What should we do for our young people who are trapped into the same pagan type dark mental outlook that the pagans had in ancient Roman Empire? Just leave them alone? Is there no solution? Yes, there's a solution. And it's the two verses that come before Romans 1:18. It's the two verses that you're not hearing when people talk about how to keep people out of the homosexual culture or how to cure the homosexual culture. The whole point of this part of Romans chapter 1 is that there's a solution, and the solution isn't being mentioned. And every time Romans 1:18 through 32 is mentioned, it really needs to be mentioned verses 16 and 17. And if you're a parent, oh my, if you're home, just stop it, open your Bible to Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, and you want to be able to find your way back here, because this is St. Paul's solution for a pagan culture that basically is forgotten God, has had its sexual revolution, is basically plunging into homosexual and lesbian relationships and basically having societal approval for it. This is the solution. Verse 16, for I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God. And power, that Greek word is dynamis. We get the English derivative of dynamite from that. It is the dynamite power of God for salvation for everyone who has faith, the Jew first and also the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed, faith for faith, as it is written, he who through faith is righteous shall live. The power of the gospel is for those described in Romans 1:18 and following. This is what gets people out of it. It's not natural law arguments. It's the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ is able to lift those who refuse to even pay attention to natural law arguments. For those whose minds are darkened by fornication and homosexual acts. For those who are living in a culture that accepts homosexuality and homosexual acts openly. That is the answer, and it's not being talked about. I want to read you a paragraph from Dr. N.T. Wright. He's an Anglican scripture scholar, and many people would dare say he's probably the leading scripture scholar in the world at this time. He talks about the power that's present in the gospel, and he's writing from his commentary on Romans, and I'd like to read it to you. Dr. N.T. Wright, quote, "We begin with the good news as God's power. Paul has already spoken of God's power, raising Jesus from the dead. Now he speaks of power again, but it's a power which goes on working wherever people like Paul or anyone today with the same commission declares that Jesus is Lord. Paul has discovered through the years of actually doing it that when you announce Jesus as the crucified and risen Lord of the world, something happens. The new world, which was born when Jesus died and rose again, comes to fresh life in the hearts, minds, and lifestyles of the listeners, or at least some of them. This isn't magic, though it must sometimes have felt like it. It's God's power at work. Through the faithful announcement of his son, the result is salvation." What is Dr. Wright saying? Is that with the simple proclamation of the gospel, there's a power, the very power that brought back to life somebody who was in a tomb for 3 days and nights, that man named Jesus Christ. That same power which brought him back to life. You could have an ordinary guy, say like a fisherman, like St. Peter or St. Paul, can go and simply announce that Jesus is the Son of God. He's the Lord of the world because God has risen him from the dead and acknowledged that he is God's Son. Something happens in the pagans who have denied their Creator, the pagans who refuse to acknowledge there's a design in nature and creation. For the pagans who are steeped in fornication and homosexual acts, for the culture that's darkened and approves of all of these things, for a society that came unhinged, became a Christian empire because simple fishermen declared the gospel of Jesus Christ. But Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. In fact, if you want to have three verses, back up to verse 15. He says, I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. This is how the world changes. This is how pagans who are in a homosexual, sexual revolution, Woodstock, San Francisco culture, this is how they get out. This is how they get out. And if you want to pair a set of verses, four verses in Romans, and parents, you need to get this because this isn't being talked about. Four verses in the book of Romans. I read to you two, Romans 16 and 17, where he's not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God to salvation for everyone, including these pagans living in self-willed darkness. It pulled them out. It transformed them. Two more verses, this time getting towards the end of St. Paul's arguments. Two verses, Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. St. Paul says, I appeal to you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. Bodies that were all caught up in a sexual revolution. bodies that burned with passion, men for men and women from women, and society that approval, present your bodies, pagans, former pagans, as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Verse 2 of Romans 12. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that you may prove what is the will of God, what is good, what is acceptable, what is perfect, former pagans, that you might be transformed. The closest English word to this Greek word behind the word in our English translations, transformed, is metamorphosis. Metamorphosis. There was a moral metamorphosis that went on in the Roman Empire. There was a moral metamorphosis that went on in the heart of the Roman Empire, the city of Rome. And again, these people were so lost that what should have been, without excuse, the arguments for them to acknowledge and serve a creator and follow the design in nature, they were basically lost in darkness. The gospel had the power to pull them out. And that's what the need is to recover the gospel. Next time, we're going to talk about some ways how to really mess up the proclamation of the gospel so that it becomes emptied of its power. And the power that was in St. Paul's preaching to the first century Roman Catholics, that's what we need to bring back to our homes and to our parishes today. You've been listening to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Steve Wood, and this has been episode 69. Visit us online at dads.org and familylifecenter.net.
Faith and Family is a radio outreach of Family Life Center International. Visit us online at familylifecenter.net. To order a CD copy of today's broadcast, order online at www.familylifecenter.net.